Hey, I'm Robert Vinlow, and I'm from New York Times Games, and I'm here talking to people about Wordle and the Wordle Archive. Do you all play Wordle?
I play it every day.
All right, I have something exciting to show you. It's the Wordle Archive.
What?
Oh, okay, that's awesome.
So now you can play every Wordle that has ever existed. There's like 1,000 puzzles.
What?
Wordle Archive.
Oh, cool.
Now you can do yesterday's Wordle if you missed it.
Yeah. New York Times Games subscribers can now access the entire Wordle Archive. Find out more at nytimes.com/games.
Somebody once told me that, you know, false modesty is kind of ugly on you. I was like,
wow.
I was like,
wow. Speaking to a whole Midwestern.
Shots fired. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how we operate. We get attention by, you know, going like this. You know, it's like, you know what? I could work on that.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your venison scrap sausage of music, news, and criticism. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
And I am Justin Vernon from Bon Iver.
I mentioned venison scrap because many years ago, I'm almost embarrassed to say how many years ago this was, because I feel like it's going to make both of us seem old. And as
we
everybody
are.
Knows, yeah. Well, speak for yourself. In 2010 into 2011, we spent quite a bit of time together for a New York Times magazine profile. One of the things that we did in that story is went to a meat processor where your father had left a deer for you that you were then picking up the process.
Yes.
In Wisconsin.
Yep. In Wisconsin. Yeah, sorry. In the outer industrial exurbs of Eau Claire, something like that.
Yes.
Okay. Done. So
that's where you come from.
You have been doing candidly exceptional work for many, many years.
Thanks.
You are here today to talk about a new album.
Yeah.
I just want to say it is very sensual.
Thank you.
Pull me close up to your face. Honey, I just want the taste. Give me right away.
We want to open with that.
That's what we like to hear.
That's the polka.
That is, I if I was writing the review, sensual would absolutely be in the first paragraph.
Let's go.
Like to hear that. I have to just off the rip ask, when I say that word to you, what does it bring up? Is that what you're striving for? Do you want it to have? I mean, I know the relationship between feeling and word and almost being post-narrative sometimes is important to you, but sensual, there's something tactile. It's almost physical in terms of how the vocal tone hits.
Yeah.
And I wonder, does that resonate for you? Is that what you're striving for?
I think so. I think, you know, if there's been a talent I've had, it's been just kind of following my instincts.
Mm.
And I think the last couple of years, I've sort of getting out of the hazy and trying to be, you know, come more into the concrete.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I mean, they were all inspired by real feelings, you know, becoming happier, becoming healthier, you know, feeling more confident, feeling more bold. And I think it just came in the songs a little more basic, like, yes, just going to tell you what it is, be more generous with the lyrical content rather than, you know, kind of evasive. Not that that wasn't cool for a minute, but yeah, just kind of being straight with it.
It's a little bit literal for a Bon Iver project.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Both in sound and in vocal delivery and, like you say, in lyric. Something I noticed about the melodies is like they often adhere. Like there's a scheme, a rhyme scheme in the lines or the melody and the delivery, and you stick with it. Like often you would smear the edges or you would do something totally unexpected. Like you're like on the track in this one in a way, moving forward with momentum by design.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of hand it. I think I just been listening to so much Bob Seger or something these last couple years. It's just like, oh man, just give it to him. You know, I'm not like saying nothing bad about the old stuff, but it was, I just much more, you know, like, hey, we don't got much time left to live. Let's be sexy.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. Like, candidly, a lot of y'all can learn a lesson from that.
I want to hear you talk about the journey of Bon Iver from, and you've talked about this in the past, like this, from I and the singular and you. You know, I think we were told before we started this, today is the 17th anniversary of For Emma forever ago, your debut album as Bon Iver. And that was known widely for its solitude and for it being pouring out of one man's soul. And then as this project has continued to grow and evolve, you've made it a collective in a lot of ways where you're collaborating super widely. You're using music from your friends as part of your own music. Like, talk a little bit about that path and where you've landed here on Sable Fable as a collective experience, as Bon Iver, as a band and a family and everything else it is to you.
That's a great question. I mean, it's really wild. It's been nice to kind of reflect. I'd say I've been a very reflective point. You know, when COVID hit, it was this time to reflect for everybody and stuff. But the process of the first four albums really, truly were just like from one to many.
Yeah.
And the team, or I don't even know what to call it. It's really a team, and the camaraderie and the family that was built. And, you know, after the last show we played, sort of just kind of let everyone know, like, hey, I don't know what else we can accomplish. I think for a band that doesn't really have any hits,
not debatable.
Yeah, well, debatable. But you're like hits, you know.
No, we're not on Z100.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. And I think.
Except we are.
Yes.
With Taylor Swift.
Yeah, right.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But I felt like we just accomplished so much. We became the best that we could be and accomplished so much at such a high level. And I got very tired, and I've been very tired for a long time. So I'm sort of just like stepping aside right now. And that's one of the reasons I have the energy and the time right now to talk to y'all about the music. I haven't really done this, you know, I haven't talked to you in 10 years or whatever it is. And this record really felt, it's like in a lot of ways, the most personal record I've made, in the sense that it really was for me. Like, I needed this record.
I always wondered in the years that of the last two albums in which we didn't speak, I saw you perform anytime you came into town, I would go to the shows. And I was thinking a lot about things that we talked about in that first interview, about anxiety about the public self, obfuscation, how much of my person do I owe the world? Just because you like my record, what does that mean exactly to my individual obligation to any one person? And I often wondered when I was watching these concerts, as the band grew and became almost like filling every corner of the stage with something, I'm like, is it a tool of music, but also a tool of hiding?
Yeah.
Is this a way to become, how can I be as small as possible while making something as big as possible? Is that what was on your mind during those years?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I was like going through so much anxiety. I think, you know, just a lot of attention for somebody that really didn't think, you know, I had a dream of having a career in music, but I thought it would be like, you know, play Wausau this weekend. I play Appleton next weekend. I play Milwaukee.
Hey, it's not too late.
Big, just, you know, it's like, that's where I was always at.
Yeah.
And then for it to go so kind of skyrockety or whatever, the rise was so big, it was kind of shocking. And I rode some of that because I think I had a sense of humor about it too.
Yeah.
And it also made me try to make music that was not just challenging to be like, yeah, you don't put me in a box. So I didn't have that kind of attitude, but it really was like I was hiding in there because I wasn't well, you know, I really wasn't well. I was overworked and kind of was overrun by anxiety and stuff. And so you get enough adrenaline up on the stage, but really, like, when you're that tired and for so many years, it just like eats away at you. But, you know, musically, we just kept expanding. And then by the end, it's like, well, let's go play arenas and like, let's make a couple of tunes that will feel really good up there in that space. And then we did that. It's sort of like, now it sort of feels like we've kind of careened off the mountain into the sky. Now we don't know what's going
to
happen.
Did you have at that point, were there people that you were reaching out to, people who had maybe a similar level of success, but maybe with also not the most conventional path to that level of success? Like, were there folks that you were in touch with and said, how do I kind of still be me in this? Did you have discourse?
Yeah, I always
had. Who were the people who were touchstones for you?
Leslie Feist was always somebody I've talked to about this stuff, you know, because, you know, that it even happened, like, I say worse, but bigger for her, you know.
She's on Sesame Street.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I love counting to the number four. Whoa, oh, counting to four.
That's the mark, you know?
Yeah.
But she was really good with me. I'd ask her a lot of questions because I was, you know, huge fan of hers. And then when we got to be friends, I'd ask her about that kind of stuff. And she's like, yeah, I used to be really anxious too. And she had this great thing. It's like, I don't know if I want to go see this band at Coachella, but I don't want to go out in the crowd because I get nervous about, you know, not like get mobbed, but just like, I just was nervous.
They don't have my space.
She's just like, she's like, burst the bubble. You're just a person, so act like one, and they'll treat you like one, and you just go out there. And so I think that stuck with me over the years, and now that I've had time to sort of decrease the pressure and just kind of internally, I found that I've been a little more accepting that this has happened to me, and I think it's showed up in the music a little bit. It's like, all right, here I am. I'm this guy that makes the music. I'll probably talk about how I don't think authorship is the most important aspect to it. And I don't think that our celebrity should kind of supersede the work we're trying to make because we're talking about music songs. You know, we're not talking about a ladder or a popularity contest, right? So we're trying to make music to change people's hearts and things like that. So anyway, I digress, but yeah.
When you talk about that healing, like you're saying, I was unwell, I couldn't handle it, you know, talk to people who've been in similar situations. Like, what else did that entail in terms of your own life to be able to get to that place where you could be freer in the music?
Starting to make some pretty hard decisions, like, you know, not being able to sign up for tours or starting to having to have other enriching parts of my life outside of shows and musicians and the whole thing. You know, I started going out to LA more, and it was good for me to just walk down the street and feel very anonymous. And like,
and did that?
I mean, every once in a while somebody would say what's up, and it's at that point it's like nice. It's like, oh yeah, I'm Justin, nice to meet you. What part of town are you in? Do you hate going to the West Side too? You know, so I think that alone, I was like, oh my God, I have made a new friend for the first time in 15 years that I didn't meet backstage at one of my shows.
Wow.
Or in my studio. Yeah. And that's just an unbalanced life. So I think starting to make a series of those decisions and health decisions and help bringing me back a little bit to be more present and grateful.
Talk to us about the Sable EP and becoming Sable Fable, the album. So the album's coming out in a couple of weeks. It's 12 songs and it starts with three that you released last year. Like, was that always the plan for the rollout? Like plopping an EP at the beginning of what then blooms into an album?
Wasn't always the plan necessarily. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew, you know, I'm sitting and looking at a pile of songs like, well, these are it. How do they fit together? And you know, I had the idea of Sable and Fable when I wrote that award season song from Sable that kind of like felt like the last thing I needed before I started figuring out how they went together. And something, you know, occurred to me that like Sable is this dark black color. My friend Eric Timothy Carlson that does all a bunch of artwork and stuff for years. He's like, when are you just going to do your Man in Black Johnny Cash shit, you know, and like put on a cowboy hat? I was like, okay. And so Sable sort of almost became not like demeaning to the music or anything, but it almost started to become, it was almost like a cartoon of sad Bon Iver music. I liked the songs a lot, and they were kind of like these last moments of like the last gasping breath of my former self that really did feel bad for himself.
And represented on the album cover by literally black square that's then surrounded by light, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's actually like all black with the tiny light inside.
There you go.
and the full record cover for Fable is like the opposite. So it's kind of somewhat tricky for folks. It's like it was an EP and an LP, but Fable, they're separate. But, you know, when I also was like, these songs for Sable, the EP, the three songs are so heavy that I was like, I can't make them listen to all this in one go.
But did you also think on some level, like releasing those three, knowing what you had kind of in the chamber, is that a bargain with people who've been with you for the last 15, 20 years and say, I'm not just going to dump you into a new idea. I'm kind of going to like grab your hand and be like, I know that's why I left you. Let me hold your hand and I'm going to slowly walk. And then when the album hits, that's when I dunk you.
In, yeah,
like,
yeah.
The baptism. That's we rebaptize you now.
Can I just have that be my quote? That was, I mean, it's a really very, very eloquent way to say that. I mean, I wanted to be generous and, like, I, you know, strangely don't think that I've done anything as spare as some of those songs, yep. Or as folky. And it was sort of like, oh, this just feels like a return, but like obviously an update. And so it was just like, hey, for all the people that just want to stay sad, this is for you.
It's interesting that the beginning, the part that where you're like the handholding part is the pain, is mm-hmm. the suffering, is the bleakness and the spareness. And then the part where you're like, okay, I have to bring you into a new world is like bangers with beats and, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, like hooks and like it's very welcoming, but like, it seems like you got a little bit sick over the years of people wanting to see your insides, like people wanting you to be
catharsis, yeah, like just like people
of,
using
of having to perform letting. Catharsis yeah. night after night and from the darkest recesses of your mind. And you're like, can't I just have fun with my friends mm-hmm. on stage? Like, was that something you've been pushing up against this whole time? People wanting tragedy from you?
Yeah. I mean, I it's a really good question. I think I did get sick, and not just sick of it. I think I became sick. I mean, it's a little embarrassing, but I was on, and I told this story once or twice before, but I was on stage, like when I knew I needed a really, really, really big break, I was on stage and I was doing this song Creaks from 22 Million. It's like just me and a vocoder, and it takes a lot. It's not like it's a lot of memory. It's a lot of pain. It's a lot of guilt. And I'm sitting there and it was like a tough day. I was having physical discomfort with anxiety and things like that, and I'm up there and I'm singing the song, and I saw a friend who was actually sick in the crowd, and I locked eyes with him, and I started weeping, you know. Mm-hmm. and then I'm just thinking there, like, this is, I have nothing, there's nobody can go like and walk me off. I'm like dead middle of an acapella vocoding song, and I'm like, this is unsafe space for me. I'm gonna have to take a knee, which I did, and get back up and finish the tune. And I remember, like, people were cheering for encouragement, but they're also like, this is what we came here for. And I'm not mad at that.
Like, I'm so glad we came to this show.
And I think that's what they are looking for. And yeah. for whatever reason, I think that if there's a gift I have, it does sort of seem to bring this sort of like church sort of sensation for people. And I love nothing more than trying to give that spirit to people, you know. I was, you know, giving my church setting outside of doctrine and everything mm-hmm. like that, but unsafe, and ran that vehicle to its kind of death right then and there. And I was like, I got to really observe and notice what's going on here.
When people would come to see like Fiona Apple or Cat Power yeah. and they were waiting for the breakdown, Mary J. Blige.
It's a Mary J. Blige.
Kanye West in yeah. the era of Yeezus when people would go waiting for the crazy rant, you mm-hmm. know, and it became a thing like, which Kanye rant did you get, you know? And people who become that kind of showman, it seems an untenable place.
Well, it's funny. It's like that. I think also something that I've investigated as a person, it's like, oh, it's all incredibly validating to me. You know, I wasn't exactly the most confident guy in high school. And then suddenly it's like, oh, you're confident. And people are telling you, you're one of these great artists and everything. It's like, it's validating, makes you feel good. And then you sort of like, you wonder if like, am I a snake eating its own tail? And like, am I just like staying sad? Am I hurting myself
in order to
get that validation
and to make more music that people can exactly. relate to on this level?
Exactly. And that's sort of what the Sable thing's about. It's like, stay in the darkness, young man. Like, it's going to, you know,
yeah, but you don't have Bon Iver unless you're miserable.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah. And that's no good way to live. And that's what Fable is like fucking windows down, sunshine, like everything is peaceful love. I love you.
A few times in just in the last 10 or 15 minutes, you've returned to the word sick and yeah. sickness. Yeah. And I wonder if you're comfortable talking about the shapes in which that took. Is this mm-hmm. is it a physical illness? Is it drinking? Is it, if I remember correctly, when we first talked, there was like a gambling thing that had happened like way before all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Like what shape, how were you, when you woke up and were like, I'm sick, what did that mean in material terms?
Well, I think I knew I was very unwell for years, but it was like, I guess this is just how it is. And I just,
I have to do it.
I could never walk away from my teammates. I could never, you know, I need to do this and I could do this if I keep doing this. I could do something for my town if I just, whatever it was. And so I was really ill and like just doing things that I wasn't feeling right for me. But, you know, physically it takes space right here. And like, it just, I think there was a good 10 years where it felt like somebody had a boot on my chest.
Yeah.
From before I woke up until after I fell asleep. And that's just bad news, you know, just physically. That's the main thing. You know, of course, there's everybody kind of like steps too far into the whiskey still every once in a while.
Sure. It
definitely takes some of that pain away.
Yeah.
And also there's the riding all that adrenaline after a show. And sometimes it's just like, well, I have to drink 70 beers now to just find a moment,
get back to
you know,
a level.
So it's again, it's like, it's exposure. It's about figuring out what I can be exposed to and still like have fun and like come down and go up. But right now I'm just like finding this space and just like loving my record and loving that I'm trying to say something and talk about these kinds of things. And
did you find that you had to, in effect, ask for permission to not feel that way?
Yeah, yeah.
And who, to whom did you have to ask? Like, obviously yourself, but I've got to imagine there's other, whether it's stakeholders or friends or loved ones. Like,
yeah.
Like who else do you, are you asking for permission to say, I don't wish to be that way anymore?
Well, what in true loving friendship fashion, everybody that I did have to ask or tell, you know, that I'm unwell and I think to change things up, they all said, I just love you and want you to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, which is just an incredible thing. But yeah, the thing is, you do have to ask yourself permission to, you know, do I have the guts to walk away from this stuff and the guts to tell the people that I love that I won't see for a while now I got to cruise for a second, you know?
There's a lot of new collaborators on this album and you've always been good about keeping in touch with the next generation of musician and replenishing your creative coffers of Bon Iver with new voices, literal and behind the scenes. Like, talk a little bit about the team on this album. You know, you have Jimmy Stack, who produced the whole record with you. You know, Dijon's on there. You got McGee playing guitar on a song. You got a lot of Daniel Heim singing with you. Like,
you gotta love McGee.
Oh man,
it's a layup, but like,
when I had a great chat about McGee when I was writing.
Okay.
And you were telling the story of being on tour with those guys, with Dijon and McGee, and you guys would just like jam and like play, like the songbook depth between the three of you must just be bonkers.
It was way too much fun. And that was the first time where I was actually like really, really, really humbled. Like, I always enjoyed the people we went on tour with, but I was like, oh, this is fresh. What they were doing on stage, it reignited something. It really had me second guessing. Like, I love what we did, but it was like, oh, we're just about Dinosaur. We're just about over our own hill.
Mm-hmm.
And watching them was so inspiring. And then, you know, I went over to Mike's house, you know, to hear his record, like, you know, a year before it was out or something like that. And I was like, fresh. God, I love it. I can't wait to listen to this all the time. And it turns out a lot of other people had the same feeling.
What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
And just Dijon, their whole like the ethic, the feeling of it all, and the way that they approach music and you know, they're always kind about like saying like, well, you're the guy that inspired us. But
yeah, I hear you in that.
That's what I'm saying.
I hear their spirit.
Yeah.
Me.
I mean, that's the best kind of creative symbiosis. Right?
And if they're just, they served as a reminder, not only they're great people and friends now, but it served as a reminder that, oh yeah, for me to feel alive, I have to like fuck things up too.
Also, like, to go back to the sensuality idea, like, one of the things I love so much about the McGee album is I find it to be genuinely full of, like, erotic potential. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's all about buildup.
It is. And it's, and with that particular set of instruments, I feel like we haven't heard a lot of music with those instruments that evokes that kind of sensation. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that album, I was like, oh, there's a lot of wetness on this record.
Yeah.
And then when I heard your record, I was like, I know that wetness. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. Like, and then you start to see, you can only imagine what it was like for him to hear for Emma or Aya. You know, it's like, you can only imagine what that put in his head yeah. to then come back around and then fall.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just, and also the prints of it and everything. But I just,
you got,
like,
I mean,
that wetness is so
not
real.
Not to blow smoke, but like, yeah. and you've had touches of this in the past, but like, you got the spirit of Prince.
Yeah, the princess.
Through your falsetto.
Yeah.
The princess on this album is with crazy.
You're really pushing it. You're behind it.
Sick.
You know? Like,
well, it's not something in the water in Minneapolis.
It's coming through.
Yeah.
But yeah, talk about Jim as a producer and why he was the ideal creative partner to bring this project to life.
Well, you know, I've worked with BJ Burton so much, and, you know, we're just like two bulls. He's probably most definitely the most talented person I've ever seen and been in a studio with. But we were at his crib in 2019, November 2019. And I'd met Jimmy a few times before he'd come out of the studio and stuff. But when he came through, it was just like, I mean, BJ had kind of got this song going. And then, you know, Jimmy like added these break beats, and his vibe was just so good. And it was just that, like, I was just like, I just like being around this person. And he's really encouraging and kind, but also just like is making great breaks on the drums, you know? And I was like, I just want this again. I never just haven't done that in a while since like middle school or whatever. Just like, let's just get a beat on it and just go with it. And so quickly, you know, sometime during COVID, Jimmy and I would send a lot of music together. But like, I sent him a Alabaster did a Plume song to chop up just because I was like, let's chop that up and I'll write to it. And it ended up becoming our song PD Life that we did for charity. Please don't live in fear. We can see from here right now. And then Kendrick sampled that.
Cologne, Germany. Full McDonald's every time I land, bro. Big J rocks in both hands, bro, and all that.
Yep. I was just like, we just got good mojo going. And so when it came time to continue working on the songs, Jimmy came out a few times. And it's just like, you know, I really got to give him credit for being so always putting me first, because I never ask for that.
Yeah.
Always putting me in that position. Like, what do you want to do? But also being also producing the record. Like, this is what we got to do. And this is how we got to see it. And this is how we could look at mixing it. And it was just a pure collaboration. I just love him very, very dearly.
And him putting you first, I mean, this is something, as you were saying, during these sort of like foot on chest years where it felt like you were like, well, how can I put other people in front of me?
Yeah.
How can I successfully like still kind of keep it going? But like, how can I not be first?
Totally.
Or how can I not? And I wonder, is there something that you've learned about yourself now in these last two or three years that truly was suppressed? Like, once the breath started flowing, what do you know about Justin right this moment that you couldn't have possibly known during that phase?
It's really hard to answer, but it's a really good question. I think I can't put my finger on it, but it's like I've just grown into saying either hell yes or hell no to all the questions that come down the pike, and just becoming more confident and less afraid and less, you know, somebody once told me that, you know, false modesty is kind of ugly on you. I was like,
wow.
I was like,
yeah, wow. Speaking to a whole Midwest.
Shots fired. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how we operate. Yeah. You know, we operate, we get attention by, you know, going like this. And, you know, it's like, you know what? I could work on that. And just, but I also, I think I also like the modesty thing comes from the, like, I don't really think we need to be putting so much emphasis on authorship. It's like we are sharing the gift of music. Mm-hmm. Call it God if you want. You know, it's like the highest form of sharing there is. So, but I can still be like out here, be like, hi, my name's Justin. I do this thing. I think the music's helpful, you know, and just kind of stepping into myself and accepting what, you know, instead of condemning reality, accepting it and doing something about it. And that's kind of been that process of me kind of stepping into it a little bit more.
Speaking of channeling something that is non-authorial or post-authorial, potentially, I remember being at the show, one of the shows you did at Pioneer Works out in Red Hook. And I remember I came a little bit late. So it's like, you know, the room's already full and it's that big cavernous space and, you know, every corner of it is full. And so I'm sort of watching the crowd as much as I'm watching you because I'm kind of stuck near the entrance. And I'm like, oh, this is the Grateful Dead. Like, oh, this is the Dead for this generation. And in the way that I felt like there was something generative happening amongst the people in the crowd, and then there was something generative happening on stage, and then also something generative happening between the stage and the crowd. And I, you know, I go to a lot of concerts, but I very rarely see that dynamic so clearly. And obviously to say like, it's the Dead, it's like a huge amount of pressure, but I wonder, but I wonder if you, when you
take that compliment.
It's, I mean, it's a compliment. But if you think about bands like that, like whether it's the Dead or Fish or even something like the Billy Stringses of the world, like, you know, these sort of like post jam type of bands, I wonder if there's something that you've picked up from that space about being post-authorial, about being beyond the self, because the experience is the thing there.
I mean, Jerry is one of the only white visionaries of music.
Well put.
Big facts.
You know, I just, I think the way that it was like, no, dude, like we should like have it sound crazy good.
Yeah.
We should build our own PA and we should just like play in fields and like give out LSD and we should just like not play by the rules and make 20 years of bad records and have the biggest following. And you know, like they're kind of not that okay records, those first ones.
It doesn't matter.
But they created a culture, man. Right. And like, I still can ride for it, you know? It's just, they created a type of music. And a type of not participating in the commercial flow. And I think really Jerry seemed to believe that that was like a, that was a, you know, a prompt from God or something, like, or like his duty, I should say. I said God so many times, but like, you know, like he's like, hey, no, man, we can't, you can't just do that stuff. Like that's so, that's not fun.
Yeah.
That's not cool. It's not like what the world needs more of. And like in that way, I've always been inspired by that. I think it's an important ethic to kind of maintain.
You've been able to move so seamlessly back and forth between your isolated Bon Iver thing, isolated both on your own and you and your people and your family, but also working with Kanye West, working with Taylor Swift. I mean, you might be one of very few people who's worked with both of them.
Yeah.
Charlie XCX, you can dip into Brad Summer, you know, like
Zach Bryan.
Zach Bryan, like how have you been able to maintain both? Because you're saying, like, you weren't seeing Jerry Garcia like popping into Top 40 radio just to say what's up.
Yeah.
Like, how have you managed to exist as yourself fully in both worlds?
It all came to me. And I think I'm really lucky and humbled by that. You know, but I never was like, get me out of song.
Yeah.
It all came to me, you know, Kanye seeked me out, Taylor seeked me out, Zach, like, and then there's all the, you know, dozens of collaborations I've just done with homies or the people in Minneapolis or Eau Claire that I just also do it because it's good and it's fun and it's what I want to do. And, I think maintaining it is just that I never got too hungry. I really didn't put rising my star ever on the mood board, you know.
Wait, there's a mood board.
Shit.
A lot of people's entire year, or if not their next 5 years, would be based around having a feature on a Taylor Swift album.
Yeah.
And they would say, this is point A, and now what we're going to do is we're going to get this licensing deal, and we're going to be in this movie, and we're going to make this kind of album, we're going to go on this kind of tour. Mm. But you never saw those experiences as jumping off points for more?
No, I mean, I, pretty early on in the career, interviewed Ian MacKaye, the GOAT, and I was just like, so what, you know, what's up with the Why No Fugazi shows? But by the way, when I went to Discord House, Fugazi's shit is in the basement and they still play.
Tight. White visionaries.
Right. Yeah. That's another one.
That's another one.
Yeah. You know, there's only a few. Maybe. There's a lot of white visionaries from Canada, but that's another. Yeah. But
you're Americans.
It's a different ballgame down here south of the border. But what were we talking about?
You're saying you went to talk to Ian.
Ian, and he said, I was like, he's like, well, the shows were getting a little unsafe. We wanted to keep them at $5. But most of all, we just didn't buy into this, like, you know, I don't even know if you use the word capitalist idea, but like, we just don't buy into the idea of expansion.
Yeah.
Like, why just keep growing bigger and bigger, like, and getting shittier? And so I've just never had that on the docket. And I think for a person that, you know, is kind of doing, showing up in different genres and stuff, and being able to appreciate so much different music, all of it came my way. And I just, like, you know, couldn't have been luckier. You know, like, I love the Taylor song a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a rare time where, like, they wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Joe and Aaron wrote the song. We're like, we want you to sing this part. I was like, this feels like going to the theater. Like, this is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I added my little bits here and there, but no, it was just so enjoyable. And I did it on my own in COVID, and I was sort of just like looking out the window. There was like a bird watching me do it. And I'm like, this is cool. This is what I do. Yeah. And it was really, it's a great song. And I'd really put that up there with one of my favorite collaborations. And I have so many of them, you know.
Do you learn about process? Because your process has been your process, mm-hmm. in like the truest sense, when you are collaborating outside, are you also, in addition to being like, how do I be the best Justin on this thing? Are you also kind of like, how do y'all do it? Mm-hmm. Like, could I pick up a tip or a different approach? Like, what are you learning from, whether it's being literally in the studio with Kanye, mm-hmm. or just hearing how Taylor thinks about assembling a record? What are you picking up on the kind of practical side?
Yeah. I mean, I learned so much from Kanye. I mean, I've been deeply saddened as well. And from a personal George standpoint,
the club.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, of course, I have other people in my life that remind me of him that I'm constantly learning from. My friend Ryan Olson in Minneapolis is constantly kind of rearranging my brain and asking me the hard questions, and the way he always has his community kind of first in his music and the way he sets it up. And, I think also when I'm showing up on other people's stuff, I'm trying not to really like become a part of the process. I'm just like, try to be as like touchy as possible. Like, somebody's like, hey, singing this song. And I have a sensation that it's like, they just want like the cred or some whatever, mm-hmm. Or something. I might just be like, oh, I don't think you need me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Politely saying no.
Yeah. Or something. Or like, I don't do it often because I don't think there's that many people out there that are just doing it for that reason. Mm-hmm. But like, if you ask and I hear something, like I enjoy doing it, but I'm kind of, I usually do it at home by myself or just trying to be not take up too much space. I think I'm always trying to learn, but I did start drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit because I was just at April Base for like 10 years smoking dope and like just kind of starting to just do the same thing. And I was like, that's when I was like, I should get to LA and just like see other people do it. And then spending a lot of time with Tobias Gesso Jr. and just like watching him care about words throughout the process of writing a song. It's just been one of my favorite I'm gleaning a lot from people like that.
Tell us about LA a little bit, because I think, you know, it can almost become like a little bit of a cheesy, trite narrative. Like, I had to like shed my old self and I had to go to Los Angeles. And I bought a car. The roof comes down.
It's a timeless cliche.
Because it's real, right? So like, I guess the question is, do you have a convertible?
No, Kia Telluride.
Okay.
If you're watching this, Kia, answer our emails.
Yeah, seriously. Come on. If not, Justin, who? So tell us a little bit about why LA and how long into the LA era or experiment did the boot start to come off the chest?
Well, so many different things, you know. I went to a program at Mayo Clinic to quit cigarettes and, like, you know, just like met these amazing friends, and we all went through this incredible, you know, rehab together. Frankly, this is really hard. That was really hard for me. It's like little decisions like that,
and it worked.
Coming off the road, yeah, 18 months now. It's right around the time I kind of came off the road, started being like, you know, I thought maybe it was like maybe Bon Iver's done, maybe, or but I had these songs and I was just like, I should finish them. It feels good to be working on them. And so it's right around that same time that I was just like, I'm just going to get this little cabin that popped up in Jimmy's neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I love to nest, you know, so I just like a tiny little workspace, a nice couch, a nice kitchen, and just meeting people. So it kind of took hold right away and met a few people and popped over to some studios, and it's just great. You know, east side of LA really feels a lot like just a couple of villages. Mm-hmm. It really feels like a small town to me. You know, I go west side to see Jenny Lewis or something, but like, other than that, I don't really fuck with that side of town as much as possible. And it just feels small, but it feels like a big city that I can kind of get lost in and have new experiences. And it's sunny, man.
Yeah,
my dad's pipes froze yesterday. It's negative 30 at home, you know.
But sun, I mean, there was, I've been to April Base. I would not describe that area as a robust, sun-filled place to create art. And I wonder, I know you had renovated it a bunch, and I wonder, but I've got to imagine it maintains a little bit of that kind of like cavern, I mean, cocooning.
I'm never more than 3 weeks away from April Base.
Okay.
I have such a deep love for where I'm from. I mean, it's like 3 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah.
You know, when it is actually 30 below, it's generally, it's also very sunny.
Yeah.
And bright.
It's so weird.
It's one of my favorite things. I complain about the cold, but it's also like gives us our identity and our strength out there a little bit. And I do love the winter. Good winter, you know, it's all good. But
that's where Bon Iver comes from, you know, but
having a little bit of a release just to give myself a new chance to see myself in a new light and to be a little smaller and to, you know, I have friends that I play basketball with now that we just met at a coffee shop. Like, what's your name? And it just is like, oh, I can
just
feel,
have a pickup game with
feel like a person.
Just
yeah.
Open.
Play tennis with like my friend Walker. We're just friends.
How's your game right now? You're what, late 30s, early 40s?
Early 40s. Yeah.
How's your body holding up on the court?
Pretty great. You know, I train stronger every day. I train every day with my buddy Jeff back home on FaceTime or whatever, just to kind of keep the things working. But I get a little sore, but I'm out there playing with some pretty good cats. And you know, my vertical is decreased. It's diminished.
You work in the post now.
I'm getting like people that are not taller than me getting rebounds over me. But you know, when you get into your old man bag, you get to be a little. You're quick in different ways.
And,
yeah, I still pass well. Still, you know, kind of, you know, got the mid range and stuff.
What's your sneaker of choice on the court?
I wear low ankle tennis New Balance 300s.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
That's wild. We got to get you some AE1s or something.
No, man. I've been playing hoops in these shoes for like, I guess I just have really strong ankles and I just like how light they feel. And I don't know. It's what I've played in for 10.
It's getting ABA.
You work out of your toes and stuff. Have you ever seen Wembanyama's foot exercises?
I don't do none of that. But I'm telling you, man, shout out the New Balance 300s. They're good.
Very wild. The Kia New Balance. Like, that's if ever they'll respond to
And you write about a lot of this stuff, not pick up basketball per se, but on the album in pretty plain language.
Yeah.
Should I stay where I'm from?
Yeah.
Should I leave?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it the land of palm and gold?
Yeah.
What was it like to boil that stuff down to these couplets, these pretty plain, as you're saying? Mm-hmm. Your lyrics for a long time have been quite cryptic. You use big words. You use
made up words.
And that this album is very plain spoken.
Yeah.
You're saying how you feel.
Yeah.
You're saying what you're thinking. Like, Was there a lot of editing? Did you have to undo some of your...
Some of it just came flying out, you know? And like, I think There's a Rhythm, the last tune is, I don't know if it's my favorite. It's probably the most important song. I didn't write a lick of the music, you know? Sean Carey and Eli just wrote all that music and just like, hey, you might like this. And I...
You just sang to
it. Just came out. Mm-hmm. And it's... What I say it's important is that it gave me a chance to like... To dust off this, like, what I would could only describe as sort of a, I don't know, like an archetype of myself, or like a shadow self, or this person that had become kind of stuck and unhappy with kind of this statue of, you know, Bon Iver, and like my identity. Like, was I a bad brother? Was I a bad friend? I'm so lonely. Like, what's wrong? Like, something's wrong. And so I think that song kind of like has been... Every era of the song being worked on, it's taught me something new. When I was finishing it, it was like kind of blowing my mind. I was like, oh my God, what I'm saying here is actually this. And so it's really a map for like giving myself a chance there's a word in there, another chance to show. No need to crow no more. It's like let's just take a beat. Let's go to California and give yourself a chance to feel warm for a second.
Do you feel like it's your relationship to being able to love and receive love is different in this era of your life than in the boot on chest era?
Yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah.
I think I love myself more.
Yeah.
I think that feeling sick for a long time, and you also like, look for quick fixes. And, mm-hmm.
You also look for people who embrace the sickness in you.
Yeah, or they are also sick, or whatever. And I think like I'm finally just like in this place where I'm like, I'm okay. I thought I'd have kids and a wife and like that kind of love in my life. But I have my health. I have joy. I have love in my life everywhere I look.
Yeah.
And I finally have like gratitude and time for it. So I'm definitely getting there.
Do you think you're still moving towards a family of your own?
I've kind of stopped taking it on as like this either or thing. Mm-hmm. I think what I've discovered is most important is just to be where I'm at and to feel okay. And it's probably been 6 months since I've had a boot, even for 30 seconds.
Well,
so I'm just like, whatever I'm doing right now, keep cultivating, you know?
And you've spoken about in this conversation about how the road was a tough place for you and mm-hmm. stage was a tough place for you. Like, do you plan to tour this album? And if so, what changes do you have to make to what that looks like to maintain where you're at now?
I don't know. I mean, I spent a lot of time writing in my book about what would have to happen to perform. I think I would take perform off of the list. I think what would it take to play this music or play Bon Iver's music again? It's a pretty long list of no's. But there are some yeses, and I'm right in the middle of kind of developing what that looks like, but there aren't plans now, but I'm not going to go out and be like, you know, reunion tour, we're you know, retiring. It's like, no, I just want to be really honest about it. It's just like, I don't know what that looks like. I want that to look healthier and sustainable. I don't like the word tour. It's just like, there could be something else. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to spend a little time and energy with this newfound gratitude and presence to, I don't know, investigate what could be better about that. Not just for me, but just how could we make that whole experience a little better or something.
For you and also for the people.
For everything.
Yeah,
for everything. And you know, I like going to a show. I've actually been going more and just being like, oh yeah, shows are awesome. It would just be like unsafe to even feel like going to a show. I say unsafe, just like, of course I'm safe, but just like, I hate this.
Yeah. But there must be people in your corner, business people, accountants, whatever, saying, you know, we put out albums so we could go on tour and make some money. Like, is there an economic imperative or you're just like, fuck it.
Yeah,
I'm doing what's good for me.
No, and I've got nothing but support in my corner. It's like that we want them, you know, we don't need more money, you know, like, and that's, you know, I think the money did a lot in the sense of our community. That's really hard to talk about for me. It's very heartbreaking. Like the end of, you know, I don't want to even say the end and shit about it, because who knows what's going to happen. But just like stopping that was really difficult, because it's like I took a lot of pride in that part of the identity, was like
providing
for my squad, you know? Yeah. And they're all so good at what they do. So that's difficult. But, you know, I'm also don't have a boot on my chest right now, and I'm trying to just see. And also, like, for once, I made a record. I worked for 5 years on it. I don't want to go on, you know, Fallon the day the record comes out and play a new version of the song. Like, these are my performances. Like, these worked really hard in these records, and I'm going to let you listen to them for a second. I'll show up somewhere at some point, we'll somehow,
figure it out.
But it will be more on my terms, and therefore will be better for everybody.
Are these the only songs that you've written in this period of time? Because if I remember correctly, there was like a prior interview in a prior era where you were just like, every song I've written like was between like for Emma and the next record. Like that's just what these are. There's not 50 in the chamber somewhere. Mm-hmm. Mm. Like, are you still working in that same way where you're just like, I have my 10, my 12, we're honing
them.
It's five years.
And yeah, there's definitely like seeds that just don't grow.
Yeah.
So there's like a folder of like, that are really cool ideas that just weren't good enough to continue. They're sort of just like, oh, you're a seed or whatever. So I don't really consider them songs until they become a song. And then that's kind of the idea with that. I wrote another song for this record that just didn't belong in it. And I think maybe I'm actually kind of into this whole like people putting out extra songs in their deluxe version. So
you like the deluxe.
I kind of, it's just this weird way for weird songs to get out there that people didn't realize they were going to love, or so I definitely might share some other stuff down the road, but like for now, this is the work, and I want to give a chance for people to concentrate on the thing that I worked the hardest on, and we'll see what else comes.
You mentioned Seeger, we said Prince, Dijon, McGee. Like, what else were you listening to get you to the place where you could perform the way you perform on some of these songs? Like, what else was swirling around your head or with you or your friends, where you're like, okay, this is giving me the gas to make these hits.
Yeah, sure, you know?
I'm calling them hits.
No, hits,
you know?
To me, they're hits too.
Yes.
I think we made Peaceful Love pretty much finished, almost a finished product.
That's
in 2019.
It's out now.
Mm-hmm. And
that's from 2019.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it sort of just came together in a day, and was sort of like, I sort of put it on a shelf and didn't really do anything with it, but I always was listening to it, and I was like, this is the mood.
Yeah.
This is where I want to go. And so I kind of just, you wait around for friends, for other things that feel like that might sort of like fill in the gaps or to be, you know, cousins to that song. So that's basically what I did, is just wait and go through things in life and be inspired and have people that come in, change your life, and you get inspired, you feel all the things. And then sooner or later you got all that stuff, and it's all feeling like a bright, sunny fable, you know?
Why was Danielle Heim the right voice to be your counterpoint from a female vocalist perspective?
I have no idea. It was also surprising. I had met Dee and the girls like multiple times throughout the years. I think I met Danielle like 17 years ago when she was like 19 playing like percussion in Jenny Lewis's band.
Yeah,
it was the first time I ever went on a tour bus. We were like smoking joints, and Ethan Grusko was the merch guy that lost all the money.
Shout out to Ethan.
Yeah, so we met throughout the years, but then, you know, Women in Music Part 3 came out, and when I say that I got like rocked by this record, I didn't turn it off. I didn't turn it off for like 3 months. It's all I listened to. And then if I like had to hear something quieter, I'd put on that Charlie Crockett record that was so good. But that's all I listened to. And it was just so inspiring. I was just like, I'm the biggest Heim fan, you know? And then Jimmy, who's always known Danielle, you know, from being in LA and friends. And he was like, would you want to make music with Danielle? I was like, yeah. And I hadn't done that in a long time. And it was just kind of still COVID. So Jimmy and Danielle like showed up, and then there was like a catastrophic snowstorm. And I remember it was February 22nd, 2022.
Oh, wow.
So it was like all the twos, and all, it was just like, we had like probably the funnest week I've had making music in a long time. We just like made so many cool ideas. And just from there, you know, a couple of those kind of just kept cruising, and I could just never get her voice off of the If Only I Could Wait, which was kind of the tune we really she sings like on a couple, but that's like really like this, we always going for like this John and Junie.
Right. That's the real duet.
The Tammy George version, Bon Iver version of that shit, you know? Yeah, we worked really hard on it. It took a long time to crack the code of those words because I really wanted them to be perfect, but really love that song. Love Danielle. It's a great experience.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you've deployed technology in a very emotional way in terms of vocal technology on earlier records. And as we've said, like some of the singing on this is the most direct singing that you've done, the least
adorned.
Least adorned, least modulated, right? But there is, I still feel like, and maybe it's because of Jimmy, like some of that feels like it's been offloaded into the production a little bit. But I wonder if you can talk about identifying the humanity and the emotional texture in a technological tool, because I think that's something, certainly I'm sure it's what you and Kanye found in common in the late, you know, like the early 2010s. And it's something that I think still remains obscure to a lot of people who think that technology is a pure crutch. It's a gimmick, it's a shtick. But I think you in that era really one of the first people to say, actually, this is enhancing my capacity to be emotionally affected. Can you talk about how you view technology in terms of your own emotional processing and sharing?
I don't feel like it's altogether different than a lot of people look at it, but I do, you know, everyone likes to talk about gear or compressors and everything, you know, it's like, but I do, Pro Tools is really my instrument.
Yeah.
More than like a guitar.
Yeah.
So, it's where I found myself, you know, at a young age. 4-track was like, you know, how I would make myself hear myself. You know, Andy, that great sculpture artist, Andy Goldsworthy, always talks about like photography is how I talk about my sculpture, because otherwise you'd have to go out in the middle of the woods to see half his shit. So I just think technology is like, it is the music. It's like, and I think innovating is a kind of an authory word, but I like inventing. Or having accidents and being okay, like that's not how you're supposed to do that. That's why you're supposed to do that. It's just, I think that's just a great way to find new sound that will create the new emotion that we haven't felt before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to even just hear you talk about it as instrument. Mm-hmm. I feel like it remains somehow like a hill that people can't get over. Like people who maybe are incredibly invested in authorial intent, are invested in like, oh, the purity of the voice is the only thing that matters. And I don't know, I've always found that a bit bizarre as a critic, because you hear so many fascinating sounds from so many fascinating traditions and approaches. But the fact that you were able to deliver something that I think people receive as genuinely human, but so much of what went into it, especially in those earlier albums, was amplified and enhanced. Really, it's like a trick that I think almost nobody, like maybe like a James Blake can pull it off, but it's like very few people pull that off.
But I consider it a huge bridge moment when you put out, was it the Blood Bank EP?
I'm up in the woods. I'm down.
That was the era when I was spending a lot of time in college being like, no, T-Pain and Lil Wayne are musicians, and autotune is actually good because it allows these guys who might not be able to hit a note to express these ideas, you know, post 808s and heartbreak, post lollipop, etc. And then you came in and, like John is saying, you sold it from an emotional angle to a different audience who then I think could see, oh, what Justin Vernon and Bon Iver are doing with this sound, this vocoder, this auto-tune-ish, making yourself sound like a computer, but being able to transmit emotion through it. Like, I think that opened people's eyes who might not have seen it in rap music in the same way. Like, is that important to you? You know, you joke about white visionaries and black visionaries, but like being able to be an ambassador for those sorts of sounds. Like,
I think moreover, it's like I like being an ambassador for like, if it sounds good to you, you should do it.
Right.
And well, like, you know, it's human. Okay if you use auto-tune on drum sets.
Right.
Like, try it. You know, it's okay if you don't do it the way you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and also, like, to be fair, it's like, it's not like I'm like, saying all this stuff about authorship and being like, oh, American Idol is just not what music should be. Right. I don't care. You know, it's like, I just want people to feel and experience music and, you know, have them do that. But for me, it's just all, I've just always, you know, been inspired by the innovators, but because they gave us new caverns to echo in. They gave us new sounds to understand ourselves via, you know, like Coltrane going the way he did, or like Willie moving to Texas. Mm-hmm. That's all part of that to me. So like, I'm humbled by, like, you know, I think there's this moment where I seem to have stumbled upon some of that stuff, but I was just listening to Kanye. You know, and I was listening to
that too.
I was loved the sound of T-Pain's voice, and I've always thought it was so sad. Like, actually, the death of auto-tune song sucks so bad.
It's very unfortunate.
A real misstep.
But also, yeah. Like,
this is anti-auto-tune, death of the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes. This ain't for sing-alongs.
I mean, look, he lost the war, so.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, weirdly, Blueprint 3 is kind of my favorite Jay record, which
that's
is strange.
Wow. That's bad. Do 30 seconds on that.
Oh, man. That. Clap for him. I don't know. It's like, I love the weird, like, Napoleon Dynamite song at the end or whatever. Like, I just like some of his raps on there. I don't know.
I agree big, sick,
big sicko tape. I agree there's sick sicko.
I'm cool with it. Yeah.
My favorite Jay album is
It's Weird.
That's a bonkers thing.
Three. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I mean, like, honestly, the
it's
only.
Not even the best Blueprint.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the only crazier album you could have said is like Magna Carta Holy Grail. Yeah. Like, it's like Blueprint 3 is that's.
I just listen to it
it's
a
like,
lot.
It's almost like incidental. It's on it.
I don't know what it is, man. It's just like happens to be my favorite one. That I like almost all the songs. Like, it's what is a thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're so kind.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just vibe with the record.
Wow. You mentioned smoking weed with Danielle Heim. I know you smoke weed with Rick Ross. Like, is it materially different blowing trees with Rick Ross than it is?
And do you want to defend the weed of Wisconsin? Because Weezy, the Atlanta producer, worked together on a Diary of a Song video many years ago from the last Bon Iver album.
I didn't know who Justin was. And when he played it, I was like, load me up, come on with it. And I just threw the drums on it, and that shit just turned to a whole nother genre.
And he told me your weed was dirt.
Yeah.
But he said it was very
I'm sorry,
nice
it wasn't 1,000% THC. No, shout out Weezy. I love Weezy.
Nice of you to get it for
I love Weezy. Yeah. I mean, I've really slowed down. I think as weed has gotten more accessible, it's gotten grosser and more like Mountain Dew than like, you know, what it was, which is like water. And, you know, I've slowed down a lot. You know, I just can't like keep up anymore. It's not like I'm like done with it, but it's just. It's like I used to do kind of mushrooms every other month, or, you know, there's a nibbly acid period of time. But now it's like I don't even do those. And it's just like, oh, should I smoke weed this weekend?
Big plan.
Big plan. Like big. I'm going to. That will be a big night. You know,
so,
like,
you quit cigarettes, but you will. But you'll still smoke weed.
Yeah. Every once in a while.
Right.
But like super, super seldomly.
Yeah.
And if Rick Ross passed you a blunt. Right now, like, would you
handle it? I'd hit that. Yeah, because I tried to get Plain Pat to teach me how to roll, and I just never could do it.
What was Plain Pat's tip for rolling a blunt?
I forget. That's too high.
We'll call. Call him later. Yeah. We can tap him.
Shut up, Plain Pat. One of my favorite guys ever. But no, I just, like, I taste so good. Like, a backwoods tastes so good, but I can really probably only deal with a couple hits. But if I can ever find just like an outdoor strain where they're not trying to like change the genealogy
like
to get stronger,
type, right?
It's just, it feels so idiocracy to me. Just like, but like,
then honest weed.
Yeah, just like outdoor, it's like a 10% blue cheese. Like, maybe I could get back into it, but it's just everyone's
whatever
just like,
Weezy
but more
rejected.
THC, you don't like money? You know?
Should we hit a couple questions on our lightning round?
Oh, we should definitely do a lightning round. Okay, so we're going to whip out the playing cards, the podcast playing cards, available in the Zazzle store, by the way, should you ever need to hit this for the house, you know?
Zazzle.com.
Okay, so we've got 52 cards. There are 52 questions.
Yep.
I want to say up front, these questions vary from the casual to the therapeutic, so we don't know where we can land.
Great. So pick any card.
Pick any card. We'll do five of these.
The Queen of Clubs.
Queen of Clubs.
Great card.
This is a good one.
Are you the alpha in your friend group? And were you always?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yes. And there are other alphas.
You roll with a
do they think alphas. That? Like, would they would they answer this question?
We know,
the same
we know who we are.
Look in the camera when you say that.
We know who we are. No, I mean, I definitely, I'm one of those introvert, extrovert things, but I definitely am like running a lot of the shows.
Sure.
But I do enjoy, and I try to get a lot better about like being a supplemental energy in a room. Mm-hmm. I think basketball taught me like that you can't just be shooting every shot.
You need a role player. You need some glue guys.
And you need the alpha to step aside to just get the juices going for the guy shooting threes in the corner or whatever. So
did your alphaness ever become a sticking point or a contentious point with circles of people in your life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're an alpha, you can mistake your sort of like overseeing as like, it can get to your ego and you can kind of miss things. You can misread things and you can miss being sensitive to how things are for other people, especially when everything's kind of in my situation where everything's kind of like, well, Justin.
You're the economic and the creative engine in addition to the personality.
So I look back and see times where I've definitely lost that sensitivity and I could have been a better friend. I could have been, you know, so important to notice that if that's who I am, to also know when to sort of tamp that down.
Sure. All right. Pull another card.
Great answer.
Thank you. What's this one? Three of spades.
Three of spades.
That's
just a relevant question.
Yeah.
What do you do when you get lonely?
Can I addenda that question? Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the broad answer, but I'm also curious in the early days when you went to LA where maybe you didn't have reference points and this circle.
Mm-hmm.
How did you fill that space? Both abstract, but also specific.
It's a pretty easy answer.
Okay.
Uber Eats and Gerard Butler movies.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Give me a Mount Rushmore of Gerard Butler movies.
Oh, I thought you were saying Uber Eats. That's what I want to know.
That's a pretty simple Gerard Butler movies. My favorite is Greenland.
I swear I'm going to get my family into that bunker.
Okay.
Patiently awaiting Greenland 2.
Wow.
For whatever reason,
that's your
his guy. Movies are like my comfort fire, firing guns all the time. Like I just generally like a somewhat trashy action series. Mm-hmm. And like those really comfort me.
I like this guy.
Incredible.
Can I ask about the Uber Eats order? Like what are we getting? LA is such a tough place to Uber Eats because it's like maybe it's going to show up 90 minutes later. Like who knows what's
going to happen. I also get lonely in Wisconsin, so it's a lot of Culver's.
Yeah,
sure. I'll get a Mickey D's order every once in a while.
Yeah, I just hit that earlier.
There's today. Panera and Chipotle.
Okay.
And then shout out Rocky Rococo's, which is a pizza chain in Eau Claire that is next to godliness.
You sent me to Culver's in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
Culver's experience.
It was my first Culver's. Like on the way, I was like basically like I have like 90 minutes. Where should I go? And you're like, go to Culver's. And I hit that on the way to the airport.
Having a social really media good. Moment. Like it's crossing over in the way that In-N-Out did like maybe 10 years
it's
ago.
It is. And it's better. It's somehow better than In-N-Out. I have always kind of said with love for Culver's that I would like to have the recipe for cheese curds be a little less bready.
Okay. You're going to love the snack portion of this show.
Yeah. I can't wait.
A critic.
Yeah, this is good.
I think it's just a little too bready when people come. You said something about cheese curds in the article too. And I was like, man, but the Culver's cheese curds aren't, actually, I would like to go Ellsworth cheese curds first. And then go to the Culver's cheese curd. But people like them, so it's cool.
I wish we had really thought this through, because maybe we could have gotten a flight of cheese curds. Uh-huh. I wish we didn't think hard. Next time, flight of cheese curds. No, that's true.
They serve them at Long Island Bar in Brooklyn if you need it. If you want to try
those are Wisconsin cheese curds.
They are, absolutely.
Yeah, at the Long Island Bar?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out Long Island Bar. I love that place.
We did, when we had Maren Morris here, we got Bucky's Beaver Nuggets.
Oh, nice.
And we had a flight of Bucky's Beaver Nuggets. So we next time, all right, we're off our game.
That's okay.
We'll fix that.
Pull another card.
Three of Hearts. This is becoming a tarot pull.
All right, you're playing good ones. I like right.
This is good. Oh, this is a good one. No one's picked this one yet.
What song made you feel powerful as a kid?
Great question. I Need a Hero by Bonnie Tyler.
Hell yeah.
She Kevin Bacon on that track.
I think she's piping.
Oh man, I would genuinely just put that on and get absolutely pumped up.
It's literally, and although sometimes I feel like in the rear view, a lot of those 80 songs, you're like, man, that really was the imperial era of the United States, potentially, but current era excluded. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look back on it, maybe like a little bit disapproving, like, did everything have to be so in your face?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I need a hero. Like, did it have to be like that? But
yes.
Yes. But certainly in the moment, you were just like, oh man, I feel superhuman when I'm hearing these records. No, yeah. Really makes you want to get in a fighter jet.
Yeah.
For real.
All right, two more.
I break down the fabric of a small town. Hey, look at this. I almost got a full house going.
Queen of Diamonds.
All right, Queen of Diamonds. What's your biggest weakness as an artist?
Wow. As an artist, let's say with the artist of being like an artist in the modern sense, like a musical artist, as far as maybe in the way I'm reading the question, like as a gateway to becoming more successful or more popular, I don't give a fuck. So, I'm not getting bigger.
Right.
I guess that's
lack of ambition.
Yeah, exactly.
Or lack of that kind of ambition.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I think you have plenty of ambition.
But like, maybe that's like a cheeky answer. I think maybe, I don't have any weaknesses.
What about really literally? Like, what are you just like when there, is there just anything you're bad at? Like, they're like, oh, play this guitar solo. And you're like, I just suck at playing guitar solo. Like,
You did say something I remember in our prior story where you were like, I'm not that interested in proficiency. Uh-huh. Like that, because you went to school. Like, one of the things you did is you were in like a jazz band in college. You know, it's like, but you were like, I'm kind of like, that's not my bag.
Yeah, like Bonnie Raitt's my favorite guitar player.
Right.
Most underrated guitar player, you know? So I think, I don't know.
No weaknesses. It's great.
There's not.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Sounds awful cocky.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I think
he's an alpha.
I think weakness is my strength.
Right.
You know, like, so.
It's good. If this was a job interview, you're hired.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear at Google.
This is literally Google. An incredible dating profile.
Yeah.
Like, hey, so I'm an alpha and all my bros are alphas. I have no weaknesses, except weakness is my strength. So just, and I'm looking for someone who loves Culver's.
Let's ship that.
Yeah.
All right. Last one.
All right. Well, I want a queen here because queens full of threes would be sick.
Oh my God.
No, he got a queen?
The queen of hearts.
Holy
incredible.
I'm speechless.
That's a good one too. That's a fable kind of thing.
You actually get to take a camera home.
Yeah.
You've like won the prize.
A camera?
Yeah.
What kind of first impression do you make?
Kind. I'm kind and I try to be generous. If I've had like 6 Coronas, I could maybe be a little tricksy, maybe a little like
mischievous,
a little mischievous, but I'm always looking to try to make everyone in the room that I'm in feel comfortable with my presence without being too much of a presence. I hope that's the impression that
sounds like
I
you make. Know yourself.
Getting there.
Working on it.
Yeah.
All right, before we go, every episode of Popcast, we end.
Dare I say the most important part of Popcast.
Yeah.
We try a snack. John and I both have an eye for the exotic, I would say. Usually that's like
Tina nice Bodega. Uh-huh.
But in this case, we have something actually from abroad.
Flown in.
Let's go.
You picked this out of the pantry. Mm-hmm. I was hoping you would pick this. This was brought by one of our producers, Sora Roque, from her trip to Japan. And this is a creamy cheese bake bite. John's scared.
Do you like
cheesecake though?
I do. I'm just like, I believe that thing looks like cheesecake, but does not chew or feel like cheesecake.
Well, I think you're 1,000% right.
I just feel like
that would be my guess.
It's going to go in a direction that my taste buds are not ready for.
All right. So we're not going to look at the expiration date.
Nope.
No. It's like
astronaut
wine.
Food.
No, it's like wine.
And we were talking about cheese curds. You're a Wisconsin guy.
Yeah,
I feel like you picked the right thing. Your soul was drawn to these cheesecake bites.
Cheese is like music. You're always trying to make new.
They're beautiful. I will say they have like
they're handsome.
They look
kind
like
of a questionable amount of them in there. It's like, or curious, I should say. It's like there's one big section and then
small
section.
Why is it 6 and 4?
So take as many as you'd like and pass. Here's my question. Should we, are we popping the whole thing or are we taking a bite?
I feel like each person to their own, right?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna, I think it'll be telling what we all do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cheers.
Three different camera angles. Oh, that's not.
Well, not no.
I'm gonna be.
It gives a little cheese puff energy early.
And then it kind of hits. Is it like
then it hits
like
a touch sweet.
Of ricotta kind of? It's like a like a little ricotta.
Notes of ricotta.
Yeah, it really does.
It's, like, it's wow. like a little brie in there. It's like it's really wow. cheesy and really creamy.
But it's really sugary too.
Yes.
I want to be honest. It finishes way better than it starts. Often with the candies we have, they start so good on the outside. And then the minute you've chewed twice, you're like, oh, this is grim. I kind of think this gets better.
I'm gonna have another one.
I'm absolutely here. Bounce back. I'm about to.
It's light and airy. It's a.
But I'm gonna just take from this weird pew because who knows if there's a little different.
Yeah, do you think
they have a nice? What would my cooking friends
crank? Mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel.
They have real nice.
No, mouth. Like the browning on
yeah,
top.
Yeah, yeah,
browning.
Yeah.
So nice. Makes it yeah. feel baked. We're all going back for a second, so I'd say.
So like, if you bite halfway through, you see the layers.
It is savory, like a brie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's
nutty.
There's mm-hmm. three distinct. Yellow browns mm-hmm. happening here. there's layers, genuinely.
We're drooling.
It's a very advanced snack.
I'd say so. I mean, Japan does everything yeah. better.
Yeah. You really put their foot in it. I'm not mad at this at all.
I'm not mad at it at all.
Now that I've kind of accepted what the initial bite is and now I'm anticipating, like I'm fine with it. I think this is an 8.5.
Oh, we're rating it.
Out of 10.
Oh, I got to have one more.
To me, that's like worth a point. If you go back for a third, that's yeah. like worth an extra point, you know?
And we're rating it on like a candy scale of like all sweets and treats?
All snacks. So what's a 10 snack for you?
McConnell's Santa Barbara strawberry
ice cream. Yes. Wow. McConnell's. Sea salt and cookies.
Yeah.
That's
like a 10 sack for me is like a sour straw. You know what I mean?
That is, it used to be a 10 until I started getting holes in my tongue.
I'm like, yeah.
So, other snacks? Like, yeah, okay.
To me, I'm like, I wouldn't pick this on my own. I'm really impressed with it as a piece of food, but like, it's not my kind of snack. It's a little too savory. It's a little too rich, but I'm very impressed with how it tastes and how it feels.
And we're having a good time.
Yeah, we're having a good time chatting about it.
It's like the restaurant where the food is sort of like
but
the vibes
here.
Are yeah, super good.
Absolutely.
The best kind of failure. I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10.
Man, but we're going to finish those.
Well, let's go. I'm down.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we're going to finish those. That's got to count for something.
There is nuttiness and greenness in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you got?
I'm going to be an 8.2.
Yeah.
8.2.
An 8.2.
Oh, we're going pitchfork depth.
Yeah.
Okay. We've typically stuck to halves and holes, but like, we'll do pitchfork. Shout out Mono.
Call it for this album an 8.2.
Yes, yes.
I feel like you're going to
pitchfork if you're listening. Yeah, make sure we get above an 8.2.
Can I hit one more at least?
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude.
Like,
to get you through the end of this episode.
Absolutely. I think this is an achievement. I think it's an achievement in structure and also flavor layering.
Man, that is well put.
So, if we exist for anything, we exist to rate snacks and also to have Justin Vernon on the couch vibing.
Honestly, I do have to thank you guys. This has been so fun.
A real honor. Thank you so much for being here. You know, yeah. I think like we
a genuine pleasure. Like genuinely, yeah. like Same. When we saw you at Now I'm Coming, we were just like, let's go.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it's really just good conversation with good folks. And I got a full.
You have a full house, a full stomach, a full heart, a full mind.
Yeah.
It's Friday Night Lights up in here.
I just rewatched that again.
Oh, yeah. Talk about weeping. Jeez.
Look at that, y'all.
It's beautiful.
I pulled a full house.
Honestly, you do get to take something home for that. We'll figure it out.
The last two cheese bites.
Yeah. That is our show. Every episode of Popcast is found at nytimes.com/popcast. If you want to see us in full, hanging out with Justin, hanging out with Bad Money, hanging out with Andre 3000, talking about the Grammys, whatever you'd like to do, we're at youtube.com/popcast. On Instagram and TikTok, we're at Popcast.